Friday Night Racing.
On Off the Ball.
And they're off.
Brought to you by Go Racing. Plan your day at the races at goracing.ie.
Friday Night Racing, and it is a bit of a doozy of a show for you tonight. We're going to play you the Ride of the Year competition. You've still got a weekend to make up your mind what you think is going to be the Ride of the Year. We'll play you that video a little bit later on. As ever, we have Johnny Ward with us, but our special guest this week is Kevin O'Ryan. Kevin, how are you doing?
Very good, Ger. Thanks for having me here.
Johnny, what's the crack?
All good, yeah. What a weekend of racing. Like, you know, Dundalk to get you going tonight, but geez, it's unreal from tomorrow onwards. Like, both days, I'm absolutely buzzing for it.
And here and in England.
Yeah, like, so the Fighting Fifth will be one of my favourite races anyway, and it really lives up to its billing this year. One of the best renewals we've had. And then the Ladbrokes Trophy and three Grade Ones. And not only that, I'm not trying to big it up here just for the sake of it, there are three Grade Ones on Sunday, but the rest of the card is really good as well. It's just top racing. If you can get to Ferry House on Sunday, go along. It's just showcasing the best of Irish racing, really. And bizarrely enough, it's December, but it's nearly summer ground still.
Yeah,
strange. It's just mad. The ground, like, was still good to firm this week.
Yeah, it is a bit mad, isn't it?
It's crazy. It's hard to believe. And the water tables are so low as well after the obviously very dry summer and autumn. And it's going to take a lot of rain to actually get down into the ground. You're cutting the top 2 inches off it, and after that, it's rock hard. And, you know, I was in Ferry House the other day, and it was hard to believe walking out on the track and the last couple of days in November that the ground was still quick. And I think they're calling it good to firm in places. Thurles yesterday was quite quick as well. A couple of horses are taken out as the day progressed because the ground was too quick for them.
Yeah.
It's crazy this time of year, but it is Ireland. When it does start raining, we'll be washed out of it.
Yeah, no, it's true. Kevin, you're a man who wears many different hats when it comes to racing.
Even put that one on. Hey. It wouldn't be any more than what you have already. Like. But he does have strong links to Jigginstown, though. Yeah. But yeah, many different hats, Kevin.
Many different hats. Yeah, look, I've been...
How do you describe yourself now? Is it... Renaissance man, is that the correct term?
Jack of all trades, master of none, general chancer, really. And
getting away with it.
And thankfully getting away with it, and please God, touch wood, I'll get away with it for another bit.
The look
longer.
Of love, I was going to say, the look of love that Johnny Ward has his eyes for you right
like
now.
Johnny here, like, yeah, we keep chancing around.
We're both still alive anyway, and we have work.
Exactly. Here, Jar, I've been very, very fortunate. I make a living out of my hobby. I know nothing else, only racing. I always wanted to be in racing. I've been going racing as long as I can remember. Dad was head man to Adrian Maxwell, and then Jim Bulger, and then Mick O'Toole. And as long as I can remember, I've been going racing.
So when you were in the back garden as a kid, were you commentating? Were you jumping? Were you like winning the Derby? What were you doing? What was the dream at that stage?
Winning Derbies, actually. I always wanted to be a flat jockey. I'm 41 now, and we moved to the Curragh when I was 6. So I grew up in the Curragh, obviously the home of flat racing. And I always dreamt about winning, riding ponies and running around. That we used to build actually Grand National courses out the back. And what we used to do with the races as well, we used to have our own little racetracks at Nace Racecourse, Leopardstown, Gorham Park. There would be myself, Ruby Walsh, Young Ted, Thomas Gillespie. I remember Declan Gillespie, they used to train. My brother Mouse, Johnny Fien, who's now training. So, just
fair
all
kids. Fair collection of wrong ones there now.
Fair collection of wrong ones. And we'd all spend the day running around. We'd break branches off the trees, pretend they were sticks. And we were Cash Asmussen's and Steve Cawthon's and Lester Piggott's and whatever else. And I always grew up, I dreamt of being a flat jockey. But I knew when I got to around 12, that wasn't going to be the case.
Because of your size? Is that it?
Yeah, well, obviously, I was getting a bit heavy as well. Mam had some job to keep me in school because all I wanted to do was go to Liam Brown's. As an apprentice, because I'd been reading about Mick Kinnan and Mark Dwyer and Pat Gilson, Tommy Carmody, and all of those. They served the time in Mick Kinnan, in Liam Brown's. He only trained, where we lived at the time was in Maddenstown, so the lads in Liam Brown's would be going past our house to go to work. And Mam said, no, you're staying in school. So stayed in school, completed the Leaving Cert. When I was finishing the Leaving Cert, Mam decided, you should go to Kildalton Ag College. And I said, what the hell am I going to ag college for? I don't want to be a farmer. She said, if you ever happen to buy a bit of land, you'll have obviously the green cert and whatever else. And to be fair, it's a good saying, listen to your mother, because 9 times out of 10 they're right. And it was the best year I spent.
Okay, so it was only 1 year?
It was the last of the year's course. It was the horse production course. Okay. In Kildalton College down in Kilkenny in Piltown. And we used to go up and ride out every morning for Aidan O'Brien when he was still in the hill. He's still at 80, 90 horses in the hill. And I'd say it was his second or third year training out of Ballydoyle. So Aidan would be there for first two lots. Then he'd go off to Ballydial. And we go back down Tag College.
Not
but it
bad.
Was great.
Not bad going to college. And Aidan O'Brien is the field over that you're riding out for. And he's just kind of keeping an eye. And you're kind of seeing how it's done. Not bad, right?
Absolutely.
I mean, if you're going to fluke a year at college, having like somebody keeping a watching eye on you, you may as well have the greatest trainer in the history of horse racing.
Yeah, well, look, it was building up experience. And you'd Aidan O'Brien training here. There was the gallop in the middle. And then below the gallop, Joe Crowley trained. Had obviously a big team of horses as well. So Aidan was breaking all records and at the time, and it was just great experience to go and ride out for Aidan and ride a couple of lots there every morning before you went back to Ag College. It was a great time, made friends there in Ag College that I'm still great friends with today.
So you found a bit of love down there as well.
Was it later on? Thankfully, okay. My future wife wasn't there at the time. She was in college because she probably wouldn't have married me if she knew me back then.
She wouldn't have.
Probably not, Johnny, yeah, I suppose. Yeah. Probably not. But
Joe Crowley's daughter.
Yeah. And Angela. But Angela was actually in college at the time in Dublin. So I actually would never have seen Angela. Only I rode in a couple of bumpers with her. Angela rode around 15, 16 winners as an amateur and then went off to Australia for a couple of years. But thankfully our paths only crossed a few years later.
Reached the level of maturity, yeah. Yeah,
exactly. I'd say Angela's still regretting it to this day.
So just to go back a bit, you wanted to be a jockey. You were a jockey, you were an amateur jockey, right?
I was an amateur and Martin Brazel was my first job.
What age is this?
That would have been around 1996. I was in Kildalton around 1996 and Martin Brazel, would you believe, used to babysit myself and my brother Mouse. And Dad and himself worked in Mick O'Toole's together and right. Martin was a stable amateur. And when Martin started training, I used to go racing with him on the weekends. Say when Dad went out on his own, bought her own place just outside Nurney. And went full-time into being a bloodstock agent. So I would go racing with Martin to lead up all around the country for him. And I loved it and would ride out there on the weekends. So I finished Ag College on a Friday. And started Martin Brazel's on a Saturday.
Right.
And I rode my first winner. My first ride was in Galway in the Amateur Maiden on the Wednesday. A horse called Blue Drifter.
The next week?
No. That was the following summer. And Mam and Dad had bought Blue Drifter for me just to get me a couple of rides. And just schoolmaster, really. So I rode my first winner on a mare Mam and Dad owned called Sarah Blue. First ride over hurdles. And I got a bigger kick out of passing Richard Dunwoody jumping the second last than I did of actually riding the winner because Richard Dunwoody was one of my heroes. And you remember when Richard Dunwoody, he was Ruby very similar to him, that he'd come off the bridle and kick and squeeze and drive him along. And when you saw him going for the stick, you knew there wasn't much left. And I saw Richard Dunwoody going for the stick coming to the second last and I'm running away. And I went, my God, I nearly fell off because I said, I can't believe I'm passing Richard Dunwoody. And that was my first winner. And I went to, I spent a year in Martin's.
So when you say you spent a year, you're working in the yard and just doing loads of different stuff as well as riding out. So it's kind of a general role.
Oh, completely. Like I would be going racing with the horses. Martin was a great man to learn from because he would, like I was only, 18, I suppose.
Quiet man, but like, a very shrewd man.
Very, very shrewd man. And he would always try and teach you. And he'd be old school as well. And I'd be going racing with the horses. So it was great experience, bringing horses racing. And say, for argument's sake, some of the breakers in the yard, he'd send me off driving them. Obviously long reins behind them to put a mouth on a horse and things like that, which Dad was teaching me at home as well. So again, it wasn't just about going in and riding out. You were learning all the different parts of the trade as well.
Yeah, so like it's an apprenticeship for any of the later roles that you could have, whatever role that might be, if it was training or whatever.
Correct, exactly. Training never really done anything for me because I thought it was too much hassle to be. I admire every trainer out there because it is a hard job and it was never something I really wanted to do was train horses. I wanted to be a jockey. And then I went to England to Charlie Mann's in Lamborn. I spent a season in Charlie's and that was great. It was the first time I'd been away from home. I couldn't even boil a kettle, to be told. Not that I'm much better at it now. I had to ring Mam every night to ask her how to cook spuds. And I remember I got rice one day and there was this small little packet of rice and I said, geez, I'm starving. I'm going to eat more than that. But I didn't realise rice expanded.
So it's actually expand, yeah.
So I put in, I think, three into it. I could have fed half Africa for a week because this thing just started keeping on expanding and that. And but it was a great lesson in life to get away from home. And you obviously had to grow up quite a bit.
Yeah.
And I lived in John White's house and with his brother Ray. And John White, of course, was the guy who won on S&S, the entry national that never was. Great time in Lamborne, rode 12 or 14 winners there. And used to ride out for Jim Auld on a Sunday as well. And used to enjoy that. And got loads of experience.
You're still an amateur jockey at that point.
Still an amateur, yeah. I was never good enough to turn professional, Jar.
When did you realise that, like, or was it?
I didn't want to be a professional. I was a frustrated flat jockey. I didn't like coming off the ground that often. Mm. And my weight was never good either. Now, I'd done it completely the way you shouldn't do it. I'd binge and then I'd starve myself and go out sweating with the gear on me, drive to the races with the balaclava and the sweat gear on me, heaters on full blast.
You can't be riding well though doing that. You can't ride to your optimum doing that.
I don't think so.
It always amazes me, like the amount of work put into like what we would say conventional athletes, their diet and all that, and being in peak performance on the day of a match. And jockeys, like a load of them, they just can't be because they're wasting. Like, I can't see how you're under your natural weight, you haven't eaten for a day, like, and you're going to extremes then, and it's inhibiting your progress as a jockey to do that. Like,
yeah, well, I was just doing it the brain dead way. Mm. It shouldn't have happened. Now, like, fast forwarded on 20 years now, there's so many different advisory groups there. You've got your dietitians, and you know, you've got your doctors, and the mental part of it must be dreadful. Like, yeah. And like, no, like you're looking at the flat jockeys now. No grown man should be walking around 8.5 or 8.6 stripped in this day and age. It's like you go into the Wareham's there, no disrespect after racing, you have a look at some of the flat jockeys there and it's cruel. They don't look healthy. And as you said, you cannot perform to your best if you are dehydrated, because like there's nothing as worse. A few times I used to do it, right? Like Dermot Weld would always give me a week's notice if I was doing light for him in an amateur race. And this mental thing, I'd say, right, I'll eat like hell now for the next couple of days.
Is that because I can or just because...
I don't know what it was, but I love food, as you can see from looking at me. And especially chocolate and whatever else. And I don't know, it was just this mental thing. It was ridiculous, like absolutely ridiculous. And then, of course, you'd panic then and you'd be sweating and look, it was ridiculous. But thankfully, there's a lot cleverer people out there doing it now.
There are, but there's still a sense that it's some jockeys like to go at it the old school way because that's the way it was done. There's still a little bit of that. In every sport, has always had a few barriers to the next wave of science coming in. Is there any sense of that in racing at all?
Jockeys are a lot better educated and they're a lot cleverer as well, and they know it's all to their own benefit. Like, you've got physios, dietitians, the science part of it as well now is in. Like Dr. Adrian McGoldrick, he's a wonderful, wonderful man. What he has done for jockeys, their families, behind the scenes, in the public eye, is absolutely phenomenal.
Weights will have to go up though, won't they? Because like it's statistically proven that people are getting bigger. Like, it's just maybe evolution or whatever. So it's either we'll have more like Latin American jockeys like they have in America, could have more female jockeys because they're naturally lighter as well. We just have to raise the weights, I think, just to make competitive. And you look at Dunica, the struggles that he's doing, he's not going to last very long. But I know the lighter the jockey on the horse, obviously, the faster the horse can go. But we have to embrace the way life is going as well, do you know?
I couldn't agree more to Johnny. And I think it's ridiculous because a lot of these horses going racing now think they're loose, because for the simple reason is, like, I just gone back to my time at Dermot Wells. Some of our best riders in the yard, the likes of Paddy McLaughlin and those guys, they were heavy lads, but they would ride the good horses every morning. So then they're going, like, you have to factor in just not just the weight of the jockeys that are the lads riding out every morning, the saddles, the quarter pieces, the sheets that would be on them as well. Like, they were going racing then and they think they'd be loose. And I couldn't agree more with you. If we keep going the way we're going, it will be full of Latin American jockeys, because obviously they are still quite small. How many actual Native American jockeys are riding in the flat? Gary Stevens is one that's just after retiring, but he's 54 or 5 years of age. There's Joe Talamos and guys
it's
like
it's probably
that.
Particularly pronounced over there because I'd say Americans are even like probably their average weight is probably even bigger than like we'll say Ireland. But like
we're catching up by the obesity.
We are catching up, yeah. But in terms of like beyond obesity, it's just the fact that we are getting bigger and I think there has to be a pan like national agreement on that.
Can we go back to the bit where you were saying that you realise you want to you're going to stay amateur? That, like, so at that point, obviously you're not going to make your living from racing horses as a jockey. What do you decide to do at that point? How do you decide to stick around? You know, because once that career path is closed, then obviously you don't really want to be a trainer. There's fewer and fewer career paths as you get along until you eventually, I think, find your calling a bit as an agent.
Yeah, it's true. I look, there was no real plan, Jar. It was just being the right place at the right time. I came back to Ireland the year, myself and Ruby, we grew up together. And Ruby turned professional and I came back for the summer. And I never really wanted to kind of go back to England. And anyway, Ruby turned professional, so I got a job in Willie Munns's. So this was Ruby's first year as a professional. Willie had these dreams of bumper horses. So obviously I was there, John Cullen was there, and Ian Am, as you know, Busty, who's now one of Gordon Elliott's assistants. And I'd say it was Willie Munns's worst year on record for bumper winners. So whether we were to blame, but to be fair, it was just one of those things that the horses weren't good enough. And with plenty of rides for Willie, I rode no winner when I was there. But a lot of what I'm doing now started or evolves from my time with Dermot Weld. And I got a call from Dad, who obviously does a lot of business with Dermot Weld as well. And Dermot Weld had rang Dad and he says that there was an amateur race. It used to be an amateur race at the October meeting in Galway and a horse called Iron County Xmas. And Dermot Weld rang Dad and he said, could Kevin ride Iron County Xmas for me? So I didn't sleep for 2 days thinking of riding for Dermot Weld. So rode him, finished second, rang Dermot Weld on the way home. And I said, Mr. Weld, Kevin O'Ryan. And he said, you'll ride plenty of winners for me in the future. Put the phone down thinking, whatever. So that probably won't happen. So I rode a horse called Peerless Motion for him in one of the first four-year-old bumpers the next February time. Again, finished second on him. Rang him that night and he offered me a job.
Right.
So anyway,
what was the job?
The job was stable amateur to Dermot Weld.
Would he have had many bumper horses at that time?
Sure, he always had around four, five or six. But there was obviously a lot of amateur races running the
flat as well, yeah.
And you would ride loads of winners. I probably rode around 25, 30 winners for Dermot Weld. And anyway, I broke my collarbone and it was to have a couple of rides in Cheltenham for Tom George. A horse called Riot Leader just got beat in the 4 miler and a mare called Carlingford Lock. But anyway, I couldn't ride those because I broke my collarbone.
Your recollection of names is impressive now.
So I know nothing else.
Yeah.
So I came back, started in Willie's for a day, and next thing I said, you know what, James Nash had come back. And James was starting to ride the bumper horses again. So I rang Dermot Weld's office on that lunchtime, asked was the job still there, and he said, yes, when can you start? So I started. And obviously left Willie in great terms. I got on famously with Willie. I rode a winner for Willie subsequently, a horse called Zara Peace in a three-year-old hurdle after I left him. And, you know, the majority of his flat runners every year are ridden by my lads. So I have a great relationship with Willie. And I'd obviously have a couple of horses there through owners and that would be going to him in the pre-training yard. But I spent 7.5 years in Dermot Weld's. And that's where everything really took off. Rode a lot of winners for him, got in with a lot of other people. And, you know, you'd be going to Leopardstown there when it used to be on a Wednesday evening. And there used to be a lot of amateur races up there. And you'd be riding one of these horses for Dermot Weld. And should I go around in the bridle? And it was just great to be a part of such a professional organisation. The horses that were there, like Media Puzzle won a Melbourne Cup. Vinnie Rowe won 4 Ledgers. Grey Swallow won a Derby. Dress the Trill won a Matron. Sun Chariot, Matriarch Stakes. Was 3 American Derby winners, Simple Exchange, Jazz Beat, can't think of the other horse's name, Evolving Tactics, and Anzar won his Galway plates, Galway hurdles.
So at this point, you're the stable amateur jockey, but obviously
stable amateur.
Your day-to-day job is being around and making sure everything's going right. And are at that point, are you already beginning to become an agent?
No, I was. I used to spend 5 days of the week in Dermot Wells, just riding out in the mornings, and that's where I met Pat Smullen. Pat was stable jockey a year before I started there, and we just clicked, and we just became friends. And Pat asked me, he was obviously going out with Francis Crowley, who was one of the leading jumps, dual purpose trainers at the time. And he said to me one morning, her amateur, Brian Crowley, had gone to England to turn professional. He went to Venetia Williams. So Pat said to me, have you any interest in going down to Francis? If you go down one day a week, you'll ride all the bumper horses. I said, are you mad? I said, I'll go down 2 days a week.
Yeah.
So I went down and I was there for a month. That was end of November, beginning of December 1999. Angela, my now wife, had just come back from being
written
in Australia
in the stars.
Two years ago. She was Francis' assistant, and she obviously must have taken a shine to me or somewhere along the line. Anyway, but I brought my two collarbones then on New Year's Day, the first day of the millennium in Tramore, and then when I came back, we started going out.
The first day of the millennium, a lot of people were sore that day, but you were proper sore.
Oh, I was proper sore, let me tell you. I was proper sore.
So yourself, Aidan, and O'Brien and Pat are married sisters.
Yeah.
The mad thing about
it. Yeah. Aidan's married to Anne-Marie. Pat's obviously married to Francis. I'm married to Angela. Trevor Horgan, you remember Trevor? He was one of the top jump jockeys. Career-ending fall in the Heineken Gold Cup at Punchestown off a horse of Richard Fahey's. He's married to another sister, Trevor. And Angela's mum and dad used to say to us that we used to always say to the girls, there's six of them, go off to college and whatever else, but and don't marry anybody in racing. Only two of them listened. One of the girls, Teresa, is the art gallery there on Molesworth Street.
Yeah.
And the other sister, Angela's twin, Monica, is a big designer up here as well. So nice. Two of them.
High achieving family.
So... Yeah. Yeah, so two listened and four didn't listen. But, and that's how it all started with the likes of Pat Smullen.
It doesn't sound like there's any regrets there. So that's where you become an agent at that point. It's like you think, okay, I can stay in racing. Had the amount of winners and the amount of rides that you were doing, was that something you were kind of, you needed to get a bit more balance of that?
Yeah, well, look, I was probably coming to the end. I'd ridden out my claim, which I wanted to do. And
what does that mean, sorry?
Basically, you had to ride 65 winners. You had an allowance, say you start off at £7.
You take £7 off the horse's back.
And then £5, and then down to £3. And then when you ride 65 winners over jumps, that's it, gone.
Right.
So that's a great achievement for any jockey to achieve. And the old bottle wasn't great. The nerve now was starting to...
Was it, yeah?
Yeah, you're starting to think about...
Will you talk to me a bit about this? Because it comes up time and time and time again, and it's the only sport... where everybody is quite happy to talk about it. And it's clearly one of the most important things. And it's not a real thing that you can see going up and down. Like, it's just complete intangible. How did you notice it was going? What does that feel like?
It feels horrendous, to be totally honest about.
It's gone.
You don't, when you start thinking about it, it's time to stop it, really, to be fair. And look, I had a couple of injuries. I broke my collarbones 4 times. That was it. So nothing really happened to me in the greater scheme of things. And you compare Ruby and all those guys, like, mentally they must be made of iron. But it's a horrendous feeling when you're starting going out thinking horses are going to step or stumble. Or
when did you notice that? Like, what stage is that?
Probably noticed that kind of... Some of the boys will say I was never the bravest in the world anyway. I don't know, probably the last year, I suppose, you know,
and
I was thinking, when you'd start, like, turning down rides and bumpers, because I wanted to go to the sales and things like that, when your heart isn't fully in something, it's time to move on, and Pat had been on to me for a year to become his agent, and it took me a year to say yes, because obviously I'm thinking about getting married to Angela. And I was hoping she was going to say yeah. I hadn't proposed to her at this stage, but you're thinking, riding as an amateur and that, it's time to be stepping up to do something else. You can't go to a bank manager looking for a mortgage and tell him you ride as an amateur. And I suppose it's like something new, you're always a little bit apprehensive about it. And I'm thinking, doing Pat Smullen, this could be tricky. But anyway, eventually I said yes, and it's the best thing I've ever done. And Michael Hussey, who's still with me, came with Pat, and that was, I don't know
how long ago was that, Jed?
I stopped riding. I rode my last winner the year Grace Waller won the Derby, and that was 2004. And I rode my last winner the following Thursday in Bellistown amid the chaos for Dermot Weld. And when I gave up riding, I used to ride out for DK for a following year. I love riding out in Dermot Wells. I love the crack there, the organisation, great system, and everything ran like clockwork. And to this day, I still actually miss riding out there from time to time. Just the crack and the banter in the mornings, you know what I mean?
I'm interested as an agent how you handle the ladder, in the sense of you have the lad at the top of the ladder and then you have the lad struggling, and you have a lot of lads in the middle, and how you cater for them all when it's hard not to prioritise some over the other, and how do you keep everyone happy? Like,
yeah, look, it's a good question. I can't really give you the answer, because, and people now will be watching this and they're going, this is a crap answer, right? But nobody gets priority with me. Everybody gets treated the exact same. I don't care how big or how small they are. And say if there's a spare ride going on a big day, and say, let it be Pat Smullen, Declan McDonough, Chris Hayes, Gary Carroll, any of those. Now, obviously, Pat was 10-time champion jockey. 9 times out of 10, they would go for him. But Declan McDonough has been champion jockey. And I would give the trainer the choice. And I think there wouldn't be a trainer out there who will say that I have favour to that. If there's a spare ride going, that there is no connection with that particular trainer, yeah, or any jockey, I will give them
options.
The list,
yeah,
and I will say, you make your mind up. And I think all my jockeys know that there's no favourites or that, you know. I'm very lucky with the crew I have, Jared, that, and Johnny will tell you as well. And I'm a bit ruthless when it comes to it. I won't take on a lad that I can't stand over and that I can't think can ride, because I'm trying to sell those.
And is that an ability thing or a reliability thing?
No, both. Ability especially, and then reliability as well. I'm friends with all my jockeys.
Mm.
Now, I have my moments. I get very angry at night. I want to win every race every day. I'm very ambitious. I'm very driven and I'm very hungry. And I want to win every race every day. Thankfully, I've done it plenty of times, but I want to do it every day. It's not going to happen, as we all know. Of course it doesn't happen. But if one of my lads get beat, a short head in the line, the last, or whatever like that, I was saying, geez, why didn't they do this, or why didn't they do that?
Do you have that
whatever
conversation with them, or do you have to bite, yeah, your tongue and not have the conversation? How does that work?
No. Excuse me, some of the younger lads now are probably listening to this that I look after, and they're doing some laughing because they get some phone calls along the way. But to be fair, the lads always ring me. I remember going back to Joseph O'Brien and Pat Smullen. If the two of them, we would have a laugh, say if myself and Angela were somewhere in the car together or that, and whichever one rang first, I guarantee you the other one would be on call waiting. If the two of them rode in the last, they would go through all the rides of the day. If they got beaten a couple, Joseph, Pat, if it was a 47 to 65 round Sligo, which those, you would think, doesn't really matter to those two guys, they would be on, what do you think I've done wrong? Or maybe I'll do this and it the next day. But that's why they were so successful and so good, because they were so driven, and every ride they had got a Group 1 ride.
I think that's what sets jockeys apart as well. That's like you are motivated for the run of the mill stuff.
It sets anybody apart. Football, any sports person, any business person, you have to have that bit of ruthlessness, drive, competitive streak, a bit of a want about, a bit of madness about you, and that's what sets you apart from everybody else, and that's what makes those really successful people.
The other thing is as well, like say you're on about the race in Sligo, like Sligo and Ballinrobe to ride compared to the Curragh is absolute chalk and cheese, and it's a lot more demanding of a jockey depending on the race. Like so if you're going to Sligo and you're drawn wide but you're on the best horse, like that can be very, very complicated, I'd imagine.
Of course you can, but I'd never worry about draws when you have the real top lads riding, because that's why they're the top. They can overcome these things. And they have all their homework done. You don't have to give those instructions. Like, trainers don't give those instructions. I guess, as Pat Smullen will tell you, Dermot Weld probably didn't give him an instruction for 3 years.
Right. It's mad, really, when you think about it.
Mm.
Like, it is. There's just obviously a trust there, a level of communication that has happened over the years.
But you do half have to understand the horse, like, because if the horse is a bridle horse, or if he's lazy, they're two completely different things. It's like, if he's not traveling for you, don't be too worried, he will find for you. Like, so I think it's not like, there has to be some level of kind of knowledge especially if you're a sable jockey, you'll already know that anyway.
Correct, exactly, because you're riding the horse in the morning, you're riding them since the spring of the year, you're riding them work, so you know all their little characteristics and what way to ride them and that. And I think jockeys, you know, the top lads, they don't need instructions, because that's why
it's mad the amount of trainers, I find, from my experience, who will blame top class jockeys for losing races, often in low grade handicaps, and you're like, well, you're telling me that Pat Smullen or whoever gave this horse a bad ride, and I'm like, I can't really buy that, to be honest. You know what I mean? But it just happens. It's like excuses, kind of.
Yeah, but it's such a fickle game. Like, you see, Ruby Walsh, to me, is the best that I have ever seen. He makes
better than Carberry.
Oh yeah, he's no. Don't get me wrong. Paul was unbelievable, brilliant rider.
You're nitpicking greatness here, Johnny. Go on.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I'm well used to him. You see, with crack we have every day at the races, but. Ruby makes something that is so, so difficult, look like anybody could do it. 2 weeks ago, the stick he was getting over a couple of horses that got beat, or this crap that he'd fallen at the last. Last Sunday, he wins an easy game. Twitter went mad. Best ride of all time. You'd swear the last 2 weeks didn't happen.
Mm. Probably the same people doing the as well. So that's the life as a jockey's agent, and then all of a sudden you become a broadcaster. It's like, this is act five.
12 jobs or something, have you?
I don't know about that, Johnny. I do it a couple of more if you know of any gone.
You do parade rings, obviously agent work, and at the races, probably, I suppose, how people know you best at home.
Yeah, well, how that came about, again, like, and you're going to laugh at me, like, I've been basically chancing my arm. I didn't know Gary O'Brien from Adam. He didn't know me from Adam. I think at the race, when I was doing it, first couple of weeks, and Ger Lyons is actually down at the Curragh with Gary O'Brien. I used to do the racing for KFM,
right?
Punchestown, the Curragh. I really enjoyed that, but it was obviously sitting behind the mic, nobody could see you. So I see Ger Lyons on with Gary O'Brien, went over to Gary, introduced myself, and I said, if you're ever looking for a jockey's agent to come on with you, should give me a shout. Gary rang me 2 days later, Listowel was on. Well, I didn't half brick myself that day. I thought, God, what am I after doing? Why couldn't I keep my mouth shut? Different, as you know, sitting behind the mic, nobody can see you. Now you're front of house.
Did that, was that more nervy than like being a jockey back in the day, or was it a totally different type of nerves?
Ah, totally different type of nerves, I suppose, because I don't know what kind of nerves. I was just nervous. So to me, nervous is nervous.
I meet sports people that are like really, really high class sports people, including jockeys, and they'd brick it going on an interview, like, they were on the late now, they'd be really nervous, but they'd have no problem riding in front of 50,000 people.
Well, I was always good at talking, and as people had said, that like the school report used to come home, and Mam had looked at it, and from every teacher was, grand young lad, but needs to stop talking. So I was born yapping away.
Yeah.
But I went down, went on with Gary and Listowel, and went grand, I hope. It went grand. And anyway, Gary rang me the producer said to Gary, would Kevin have any interest doing two more days of Listowel? So that's how it all started.
Yeah.
And then I was just on as a guest with Gary. And as Dave Duggan was working for At The Races at the time, so he would come over and do a bit of presenting when Gary wasn't able to do it. So then he left and I started presenting, and I think we were with them 14 years. Enjoyed every minute of it.
Yeah.
And it opened up so many different avenues for me.
Yeah, it's great the way this happens. It is kind of a Forrest Gump style career. I don't know if that's just the right place, the right time, and the opportunities come, but you have to be able to ready.
You have to ask for the work and put yourself out there.
You have to succeed. You can't just, you know, if Listowel hadn't gone well, you wouldn't be there 14 years later, you know?
Well, I'd be very hard on myself. I'm very self-critical. And I always have been. As I say, I'm very driven and ambitious. And if I want something, I go and get it. I try to go and get it. And I am very, very hard on myself every day. Even going back to the jockeys, if I miss a winner, I'd be kicking myself over that. Now, in the greater scheme of things, it means very little. And I'm always trying to learn. Every day is a school day. And I want to be the best at whatever. I want everything I do, I give 110% to doing it, to try and improve. And I'm just very privileged and honoured to be making a living out of my hobby, which is racing, which is a brilliant, brilliant industry.
It is. It is great to be able to be involved and so embedded in something and still love it after all these years. We're going to talk about some of the races now, so maybe stay with us and give us some of your thoughts. And you can maybe give us some insight. We might pick a winner.
Might struggle. It's
been a while since we've had a winner.
Well, you've so many jockeys, you must know one. Like, you know one horse that's fairly well fancied, because you'll have a jockey in the same race as well that's on one.
Well, I tell you, I fancy a couple tonight in Dundalk. Is that any good to you?
I think we can squeeze that in.
Yeah. Before we get to that, I just want to play this video because voting is now open in the 2018 Ride of the Year Award. The winner will be announced at the annual Horse Racing Ireland Awards on Tuesday, the 4th of December. So that is very soon. Two of Ireland's greatest jockeys, Johnny Murta and Ruby Walsh, have chosen six nominees, and it's up to racing fans to decide on the winner. Everyone can vote through the website goracing.ie. Here's a snippet of how they judged it.
Ah, what a nice bit of racing with Ruby Walsh. Have you got the tea ready, Rube?
Yeah, yeah. Tea, Johnny. One sugar,
yeah? Yeah, one sugar, that's good.
Not so bad, no milk?
No milk.
Right. HRI have asked us to nominate a few rides each for the 2018 Ride of the Year. I could have picked a dozen. Patrick Mullins and Undersoul, Katie and Ante, Northfield and Mona Lee, but I only had three choices. I'm set, are you?
I'm ready. A lot of flat lads rode really well this year, so I've picked out three of my best. I'm sure, you know, top rides by top jockeys.
Like, there's no preference in this. The rides are whatever way they are, but like most things in Irish racing, the flat's up first.
Well, naturally. First ride is Colin Keane, Tennessee Wildcat, Tipperary. Two things about this. He's a horse that's very hard to catch right. You don't hit the front too soon and you can't use the whip on him. So, like, you know.
It's easy in theory, isn't it?
It's very easy in theory, but you can see him here. He's in there, Sean Jones's colours, following Decky McDonough. Dunnick is just in front of him. Turns into a bit of a sprint down the straight, but he's travelling really, really comfortably. And he just has his horse in a great rhythm. And when he eases him out here, listen, what's the temptation?
Oh, but sure, the temptation now is to go, you're going by the two, to go and join Decky. He doesn't want to be in front too soon, so he has to stay a length behind him. And now he's won, has he got enough of time? But
hands and heels, strong. He's very, very strong. He's rolling him around there. He's doing a few different things just to get the horse going. Now he has him in full flight. But what's the temptation?
You have to hit him. Give him one. Go on, just to get that.
But he didn't. He didn't. And don't hit the front too soon. Boom. On the line. Listen, he's a champion jockey. And that's what they do. That's what we expect.
Pretty impressive.
I really enjoyed that, yeah.
Yeah.
I think for people who can see it, like, we're not into racing, the complexities of riding a horse who basically resents the whip. And just to point out, the whip does not hurt horses. It just makes a cracking noise that kind of, over time, they're like, well, that'll make me go faster. But there's no harm in it whatsoever. But some horses, like, have their quirks. That's one of the reasons I love racing, because the horses are very different.
Yeah.
Colin Keane, in that particular footage there, he rode away in a horse, but he couldn't go flat out, and he won by a short head, and that's basically as good as it gets.
Johnny Murta's getting younger looking.
Oh, he's, when we had him on there with Joe Schmidt and John Small before, like, I'm actually writing about Joe Schmidt on Sunday, and I was talking to you during the week about that night, but the way Johnny Murta rubbed off on Joe Schmidt, I don't know Joe Schmidt obviously at all, but I doubt someone could have that sort of an influence on him and make him just so comfortable, a guy he'd probably quite probably never met before. Johnny's a great guy.
Oh, he's unbelievable. I'll tell you what, he is a good trainer.
He's having a fantastic season.
He's a top class trainer, and there's very few former top flat jockeys make top trainers, but he and Freddie Head are the two that, you know, Freddie Head's been phenomenal in France.
Yeah, it's a pretty amazing life. Okay, so you were going to talk about some in Dundalk tonight, because we were going to talk about Saturday and Sunday with Johnny. What did you have in Dundalk?
King's Vow is one, is it?
King's Vow is a massive chance in the nursery, yeah, but there's a couple of sneaky ones in now as well. That's
my nap of the night. It might be too late for some people listening.
It's a minefield. I think Pennsylvania Avenue, Gordon Elliott's 2-year-old, horse by Zoffany. Thought he could take a bit of beating later on, Pennsylvania Avenue. And Black Martini, maybe, of Willie McCreary's and the
we
other
had Willie on, possibly the most popular guest we've had so far, certainly up there. Willie made a great impression, and I think that horse might have even been running that night.
All right.
Black Martini.
Yeah, Willie's a great guy.
Great guy.
Yeah, we need more Kildare representatives here, not less. Yeah.
Of course, we should mention Niall Cronin, our fellow journalist, who's gotten the job as an ace senior manager next season. And as far as I know, Nace are kind of have been in the doldrums in terms of, but they have a lot of underage teams come up, but he's a backroom team that includes Liam McHale.
All right.
So he was saying to me,
football.
Yeah,
all right.
He was saying, I'm gonna get a big name or a couple of big names on my backroom team, and Nace are the team to look out for now in Kildare football. I think
we'll see.
I think we need McCreary back.
Yeah,
we want to have a couple of pints at McCreary and a couple of the all-time Kildare lads come in and start saying, Willie, we remember in '97. His chest comes out, his head gets bigger, and I say, Willie, if I'm listening to this for the night now, I'm going home.
He was like that on the show as
and
well.
And he give me a little nudge, and his nudge would drive you across the room there.
Big man.
Good guy, though.
The Tote.com charity winnings for the Irish Injured Jockeys currently stands at €1,485. We hope to add to the tally with a bet on this weekend's Winter Festival racing at Fairy House. Last weekend's pick was Squatter, which pulled up at Navan. But thanks to the Tote, we've got another €100 to try again. This week, you're going for Sam Crowe, Johnny, in the Bet Victor Fighting Fifth.
Yeah, we did a bet on ARC weekends. I can't actually remember what we tipped now, but we're betting into the French pools, which is something you can do on the Tote. So you can back into the pool in England tomorrow, which would be the Bet Victor Fighting Fifth hurdle at 2:05. I'm absolutely buzzing for this race. Sam Crowe's my favourite horse in training.
About the betting into the pool. If you're backing an Irish horse in England, you're better doing it that way, are you? More than likely, the Irish prices here.
It doesn't really matter what where it really comes into play is, like, if you're backing into the pool in the Far East,
right,
where they are crazy into their betting, but they have to bet in the pool. So Caffrey was running there the other day, and his price was
Japan Cup.
Yeah, his price was basically way too big on the Tote, and you can get it in France. There was a great story in France when Deep Impact ran in the ARC, and all the Japanese, like, they were at the track from basically dawn to see, like, this their new Pegasus, and they backed him, like, into odds on. He was not an odds on shot, but they all backed Deep Impact, and it meant that the winner, Ray Link, was, like, I think about 25-1 when he should have been about 10-1.
Right.
So that can happen. So betting into the Tote pool is often very wise on international races. On Sam Crowe, I'm not sure what he'll pay, but I'm mightily excited. He's taken on the reigning champion hurdle winner in Bouverdere, Somerville boy, who obviously won the Supreme last season. Has the bubble burst with Sam Crowe? I don't think it has. I know he was beaten in Down Royal, but there was a debate there that the weather was so bad. It was like, you know, they say Sam Crowe can walk on water, but, like,
as not that much.
Brendan Duke made a good point. Like, he probably just walked on water because Kenboy couldn't get the boat across from Willie Mullins. There was some travel issues, but there was a doubt about, like, are the seas actually safe enough to travel with Storm Diana, whatever. But Sam Crowe, I think, is in the northeast. And all systems go, and one of your men is riding him.
Yeah, Jack Kennedy. Jack is one of two jump jockeys to look after. Davy Russell, obviously, as well. And I don't think the bubble has burst. How can the bubble have burst after one run this season? I was there for At the Races that day, and he looked good and big. He had a lot of condition on him, Ger, before that race.
This is the other thing about going racing. If you're a good judge, you can go in, you can watch the ring. Sam Crowe was 1-3 that day. So, like, a lot of people are going to wager on him, and you can say, yeah, I'm not having this. I mean, he's going to need the run. He was well beaten, and he needed the run.
And remember, Apples Jade ran an identical race to Sam Crowe in that race a couple of years ago, and she got beat as well. We're all walking away going, oh, maybe she's not the filly she was.
And rocked off in this.
The only thing that disappointed me about Sam Crowe, and I probably said it to you as well last year publicly, I was all over him. If this horse stays over hurdles, this horse wins the champion hurdle if he gets there in one piece. I thought he'd the gears, the whole lot, to go and win a champion hurdle. And that's what I was disappointed with. Just from the back of the second last to the last, when Jack has asked him to quicken up, he just looked a bit one-paced that day.
I don't think that was gears, though. I just think he probably blew up, like, you know, because that's what I'm hoping. Like,
yeah,
anyway.
That's what I'm hoping as well. I obviously hope he wins for obvious reasons. And with the run under his belt, Bouvardier's having his first run of the season. Somerville Boy is having his first run of the season. So whatever they're going to do, they are going to improve fitness-wise. Sam Crowe, I think, would be very hard to beat. Don't rule out Bedrock. Not that he's good enough to win, but was he 16-1 or something?
He obviously beat him in Down Royal.
He beat him. He's mad fit, and he's a progressive horse. He's improving again. But Sam Crowe, for me, I think he'll win.
Okay, just a reminder, you can avail of Tote's price guarantee and follow the Fairy House Winter Festival action this weekend on thetote.com. So let's talk about Newbury before we get to Fairy House. We can finish up with the three big ones at Fairy House. So Newbury, you want to talk about the Trophy Chase, which is a...
Yeah, the Ladbrokes Trophy Chase, 250 grand race, used to be known as the Hennessy. Very, very small field, Kevin. Like, Kenboy, we mentioned, I don't know what happened with him, but he hasn't gotten the boat over anyway. He would have been possibly favoured under a penalty. Total Recall won the race last year for Willie Mullins. There's only 13 runners in a race worth
$250,000. That's the smallest field in years, it says.
I'd say so. Like, you're normally getting, what, 18, 20 runners, more even. So it's a bit underwhelming, but I like Miss Parfall for Andy Honeyball. She was She was a really admirable novice last season. She ran behind Rathvinden in the 4 miler at Cheltenham, and Patrick Mullins gave Rathvinden a beautiful ride. And then she was second to Terra 4 at Aintree. She's rock solid novice form. I like sophomore chasers in handicaps because I don't think many, if any, horses have Anton in hand in these. She's a course winner and she's very, very reliable. And I imagine this was her plan. 11 stone one. And I just don't think it's that strong of a race, to be honest.
No, it's not. I know he's plenty of weight, but Paul Nicholls' horse, Black Carton, how Briony Frost
stayed up the last day, unbelievable.
First run of the season. And to be fair, he usually is a rock solid leper. I know he's plenty of weight, but as you said, Johnny, there's no den man in there, horses like that calibre that have won this race in the past. And 12 to 1. Price
he
is?
Yeah,
he's a great each way bet tonight.
Actually, the weight wouldn't worry me at all. There, it's the ground isn't that bad, and Briony is a bit like Rachel Blackmore in that she's basically kind of at the top of her profession in a race dominated or in a field dominated by males, but she's well able to ride.
Oh, she's well able to ride, and isn't it great for Rachel Blackmore as well? 60 winners leading.
She's leading now. Yeah,
fantastic.
Let's move on to Fairy House then on Sunday. So three big races here that we're going to talk about: the Hatton's Grace, the Drimmore, and the Royal Bond Novice Hurdle, which is the first one of these.
Yeah, obviously given mention to Bar One, it's a tricky time for bookmakers, and in fairness to Bar One, they're sponsoring the whole card in a big field. And like the thing about this card is there are three Grade Ones, and there's a Grade Three, and there are handicap hurdles and a bumper that, like, this is a race day that is literally laden with quality, top to bottom. It's live on RTE as well. And, you know, there's just so much quality. I suppose we'll start with the Royal Bond. I'm very interested in Kevin's view on this race because I think the most promising horse here is Commander of Fleet, but I just can't see him being a two-miler. I thought he looked like he needed even further than 2.5 the last day. He's probably a very, very promising horse now, but I just thought he might be vulnerable over the trip. And the more I looked at the race, I wasn't sure what had beat him. Maybe Aramon. I'm not sure.
Yeah, Aramon was good. I was impressed at him in Navan, actually. Quick grab him.
He was disappointed.
I was impressed at him up until Navan. Mm. And he looked again like a horse. He was going to drop out and he's flown home again. He looks like a horse that needs stepping up and trip. The Jigginstown horse was very good in the Land Rover bumper. Mm. And he just showed plenty of signs of greediness for me today when he won over hurdles in Punchestown from the run to the second last to the line. But he's a horse with a big engine because there was a lot of chat about him when he came out and he won the Goff's Land Rover bumper last year. And he gave Gordon a 1-2. Was Column of Fire second?
Yeah, runs on
the maiden hurdle tomorrow in Fairy House.
Yeah, and this is a horse by Fame and Glory, and you look at stallions who were promising. Fame and Glory died very early as a stallion, and it's quite sad because the only reason we see him now is because of like a posthumous kind of sire, I suppose, but he would have been a promising stallion, and this is one of his more promising horses. So I honestly don't know what will win this, to be honest with you.
Okay, and so what type of novice hurdlers are these? Where do these end up?
Well, you'd say the supreme novice hurdle at Cheltenham, but the likes of Commander of Fleet, I could easily see him running in possibly the Neptune, if not even the Albert Bartlett. I think he stays well. I don't think the other horse in this, there were some other entries that probably, they were taken out for this reason or that. I think he's going to be the most promising of them.
Okay.
I don't really see any of them win a Cheltenham grade one otherwise.
And what's the difference between the Drimmore and the Royal Bond? They're both novice chases, but...
Royal Bond's a novice hurdle, so okay. That's the same.
Obstacles are bigger.
Proper races, the two of them. And The Drinmore, then, I probably go with Larishburg here. He's a very, very smart horse. Delta Work against him. Delta Work won at Cheltenham last year over hurdles, a handicap hurdle. Great finish against a horse of JP's, Glenn Lowe, who possibly should have won, but he does jump well. He was very good at Down Royal. But you know, spare a thought for the likes of Rashan as well. Colin Kidd, was it on this card that he won the Grade 3 as a 3-year-old, I think?
That's right, the juvenile hurdle.
Colin Kidd would have... He's like... We always have this gag when you ask the small trainer, how many horses do you train? And he goes, oh, 3 or 4. And we're like, but it's, you've only 3 or 4. You must know. Like, do you know what I mean? You'll ask Willie Mullins and he nearly have the number off. Like,
one might be on a break.
Yeah. But Colin would have 3 or 4 and he's cheap. He's on Rash. And I'd love that horse to run well, but I do fancy Larishburg here.
Yeah, I like Delta Work. I thought he put up a phenomenal round of jumping in Down Ryle. He beat Ben Dundee, who came out and won a good beginner's chase by a good margin in Punchestown. And a horse you wouldn't rule out, he's great each way price, 7 or 8 to 1, is Discorama. I was impressed with him. Paul,
he's a lovely horse.
Jumped brilliantly.
He's a lovely horse.
In Nace. It's a cracking Drinmore. Delta work for me in Discorama's each way bet.
Okay, so the Hatton's Grace is the last one then. And we've got a fairly heavy odds on favourite here.
We do, in the form of, unless I'm mistaken, Apple Jade. Yep. I thought she kind of... I was forgiving her at Cheltenham last year. She was probably one of the bankers of the meeting. I think there were signs maybe or suggesting that she was coming in season. But she was, I thought she was disappointing afterwards at Punchtown. I was finding it hard to forgive her the two runs. But she did it well at Navan. I think Jack was very happy with her at Navan. He just seemed to think that she was back to her best. Super Sunday is definitely a threat. Over 2.5 miles on this ground, he's a chance, but I'd marginally prefer her. But it's not going to be, I don't think this is going to be straightforward. I think it's a good, good race. I think Super Sunday, he obviously skipped the run last day behind Faheen, but 2.5 miles on nice ground, he's a big threat.
I've backed all these long odds horses at one stage or other in the last couple of years. And,
often tipped by Kevin Kilbane.
And regretted them all. Yeah.
I'll tell you what I'm going to go for now. Apple's Jade, right? Obviously, if she's going to be very shy, you're not going to take 8 to 11 on about her. She's very impressive now at Navan the last day. I, like you...
That race, though, is nothing compared to this. Like,
no,
the second
completely,
favourite disappointed
completely
as well.
Agree. But it was great to see her back on a winning streak because Gordon, and a testament to Gordon as well, because this filly was having very... the problem with her, I think, was that she was coming in and out of season.
Season, yeah.
But she was very good the last day. The only four-year-old in the race now, he's a massive massive mountain to climb, being a four-year-old taking on those horses. But 16-1, Farkla is a tentative each way.
Presume back. That's his first try at 2.5 as well, yeah.
Yeah, first run of the season as well. You see a lot of those triumph hurdle winners go on to... And it's obviously a tricky year, the four-year-olds the next year taking on the older horses, but plenty of those triumph hurdle horses have gone on to one further. And Farkla, good winner of a triumph hurdle, and I think he's each way bet to nothing in it, 16-1.
We have, I just brought up a tweet around the week about Jiggins Sound, because the card on Wednesday at, where were we, Punchestown, Jiggins Sound had a 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 in a maiden hurdle at Navan on Sunday. So, a lot of people are very wary of like a monopoly and blah, blah, blah. But Jiggins Sound then ran quite a few horses against each other on Wednesday. And the racing was unbelievably competitive. So you have here, they have like Farkla, Apple's Jade, Dartman Park. What's your take on it? Because I think they're so positive in the way their horses are campaigned. And I know we'd like more owners in the game, but I can't say I'm at all negative about how they operate in terms of Michael O'Leary, how he looks at Irish racing.
I couldn't agree more with you, and it making racing very competitive, because their horses are, they're all ridden the same, and they don't really mind who wins as long as one of them win, and there's no hidden agendas with them. I think the negativity they get is totally unjustified.
Bear in mind now, Michael O'Leary pays his tax in Ireland, but he also runs all of his horses in Ireland, all of them. So all of his money is put into Irish race.
But lads, look at the money that's coming back into the industry. And it's the same with JP McManus, any of those big owners. Eddie O'Leary, who's an unbelievable judge of a horse, he runs his own massive business in Lynn Lodge Stud. He goes to the Derby sale, all those store sales every year. He spends fortunes on horses, who then allows the vendors to go back and re-put it into the game and obviously go back and buy foals and younger stock. They can do jobs in the place, so the fencing man is and the builders, they're all benefiting.
Trickle down effect.
It's all trickling down along the food chain. They go to the Pint of Pint men, the Colin Bowes, all of those, buy Pint of Pint winners off them. Then that entails them to go and spend and tidy up the place as well and spend a few quid. So everybody benefits. I think the negative publicity they get, but it's a real Irish thing really, isn't it? Because I can't
the begrudgery
handle this.
Kind of.
The begrudgery, the land of the begrudgers. People will be talking about you. You know how if you're doing well or bad. Because if everybody's giving out about you, you know you're doing quite well. If nobody's giving out about you, you know the dole queue is.
It is the old story about the guy in America who's like, he sees the guy in the mansion, he goes, I'm aspiring to be you. Whereas in Ireland, it's like, who do you think you are? William,
that's Bono. I'm going to get
But it's
that
like
guy.
The Gordon Elliott, yeah. Willie Mullins thing. The amount of negativity about them.
They're two like, just great trainers.
Gordon Elliott rose an amateur with me.
Yeah.
Willie Mullins started off, okay, he was Paddy Mullins' son. But he wasn't training. He had to go and get his own place. Start
it wasn't
off
like
10
Kim
horses.
Jong-un where he's born into like, you know, an amazing dynasty.
Yeah,
like.
And that's why the big owners have gone to them.
Yeah.
And I think they should be applauded.
Kevin, before we let you go, we should ask about Pat and how he's getting on.
Pat Smullen, thankfully, he is getting on very well. He came out of, he got home on Wednesday of this week after
Been in for 5.5 weeks. He had the Whipple operation. Obviously, you don't need me to explain that. But there was a few ups and downs, but that was to be expected. And thankfully, it has all gone extremely well. And it was brilliant to see Pat get out of hospital on Wednesday. The team in Vincent's private have just been phenomenal. I'd go up to Pat a couple of days of the, a couple of nights of the week, and the nurses, the doctors, they just unbelievable what those people do. And thankfully, Pat is home. And after 5.5 weeks, he went out. I think he had a walk on the beach on Sunday, went for lunch a couple of times before he got out. So look, onwards and upwards, and please God, but he's been so strong. What he's gone through, we couldn't even begin to imagine. But thankfully, and look,
I didn't hear one word of complaint. You know, any interview I saw, no feeling sorry for himself. He's every right to feel sorry for himself. No self pity. Just took it on the chin and said it actually made me change my outlook on life. And of all the things that happened in racing in 2018, the fact that he's happy at home with his family at Christmas is by far the biggest. Like,
yeah. Oh, definitely. But thankfully, he's home. And as I say, he's not just my brother-in-law, he's one of my best friends. And please God, that's what we want for 2018, is PJ Smullen to get the all clear.
Well, fingers crossed. Kevin, thanks for joining us. It was great stuff.
Thanks for having me. I enjoyed it.
Yeah, it was great.
Hopefully I haven't bored you too much.
Not at all. It was brilliant. We learned plenty. So that's pretty much Friday Night Racing in the books for this week. If you missed it, we're on the radio again this evening at 8 o'clock. And if you're listening on the radio, then we're live again next Friday afternoon at 3 o'clock across all of our social channels, brought to you in association with goracing.ie. Check out that website before you head off racing at the weekend and enjoy the racing, whatever you watch it. Raf is up next with his Bobby Pires interview, so stay tuned.
Friday Night Racing.
On Off The Ball.
And they're off.
Brought to you by Go Racing. Plan your day at the races at goracing.ie.